Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
Good day, Montreal. Yes, it's that time again, the day before the election. And we'll be taking you through it, and we'll be talking you through it with an extraordinary show. We haven't got one angry man here today. We've got a whole bunch of angry people, and we hope you're angry, too, and want to hear from you. But before I introduce the guests in the show, I want to share something with you on a personal level. It's something I received in the mail this week, and it just stuck in my craw, and I think we should all listen to it and talk about it. We've tried these past few weeks of this show to show you the power. Power that each and every one of us has to change the way we live, to make people dare to care, to give every single one the courage to talk truth to power and take control of our lives against governments or institutions run amok to the sense of their own self-importance. You've met remarkable people here. General Lou McKenzie, almost alone, voiced a vision of greater national pride and purpose. Civil liberties lawyer Julius Gray, who's fought a legal system too often nothing more than a two-edged sword of craft and oppression. Democracy Watch's Duff Conacher, single-handedly through a 12-year struggle, who made government ethics a frontline issue. There's John J. Rufo, who has championed some of the most vulnerable among us in the face of bureaucratic indifference. All these people have taught us the power of one. Lone voices whose purposes and policies opposed by authority enrich our lives by giving us hope. That's the power we've tried to teach you and bring to you. I believe that you, the people, understand that. And your calls and emails have borne that out. But this week I got one letter that just had to be talked about. It suggested that maybe the ordinary guy and gal on the street we're talking to doesn't understand what we're trying to do, doesn't care, hasn't got the guts, that we should just play down to just folks. Have fun with the anger. Well, I don't believe that. We, the people, aren't stupid. We just get tired. Tired of politicians and media types talking down to us, always appealing to the lowest common denominator, and that just doesn't meet their duty. I'm talking to you through a powerful medium, and if this medium just becomes another vehicle for distraction or amusement or deflection, it does a disservice to its very name, the fourth estate of government. And I believe you, the listening public, understand that and thirst for the bar to be raised. You want a recognition of your own consequence. I believe that when you see that there are those willing to lead, willing to serve and sacrifice, despite being attacked through slime and insinuation, you feel empowered. You're filled with the conscience and character that lets your spirits hope and dream and soar, and in common cause with your friends and neighbors and fellow citizens, realize the potential inherent in each of us to make the just and the right and the true prevail. I don't believe that the less educated are any less intelligent, nor that the less privileged are any less brave, nor that the less powerful are any less human. And I think you share those sentiments. This week has been one of stark contrasts. We've seen politicians throwing lies, damn lies, and statistics at us. Yet we've seen diplomats killed, soldiers injured, a courageous firefighter dying to protect a family. Our values and visions can't be defined by dollars and daycare. Our public discourse cannot be allowed to become so debased. We demand more. Not long ago, our leaders defined us differently. They spoke of hopes that are high, a people that are great, a courage that is strong, and dreams that shall never die. The best use of this medium and the promise I made to you at the outset was to restore those hopes, that courage, and those dreams. And if you think all that is being compromised by our political leadership, we want to hear from you today on the new 940 Montreal, 790-0006.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
On the eve of what may be the momentous election since 1984, we'd like to know from you, is anybody listening, or have you, as Montreal has the population, has Canada been so turned off, so pissed off, so pushed around by government that you don't just give a damn anymore? You don't think anybody's going to get out of your hair. With me in studio is Rick McConomy, and our first special guest is Patrick Gagnon. Pat's had a very special career. He was a member of Parliament, recently started a company called the Parliamentary Group, which is a unique lobbying group that has MPs or former MPs from every party, Liberals, Tories, NDP, even an independent, John Nunziata. Welcome, Pat.
Welcome. Thank you.
Pat, what's this campaign been all about? How good or bad has it been?
I think when you make any comparisons with 93, it's people, it's first and foremost, I would say, Liberal fatigue. It's been 12 years. It's been a long time. As it was back in 84, it was Liberal fatigue then. Back in the 50s, I mean, we're going through a transition. We're going through a change. I also think this campaign, there was a serious lack of focus, serious lack in terms of what are the primary issues for the Liberal government. I think Mr. Harper made it very simple for Canadians. He talked about the GST. He talked about real issues that sort of impact regular Canadians. So there was sort of a mismatch, if you will, between the Liberal view, the Liberal vision, and, of course, coupled by fatigue of a government that's gone through a series of difficulties, as we all know.
Did the Liberals push the hysteria button too early?
Pardon?
Did the Liberals push the hysteria button too early?
I think Canadians were asking more. I think negative ads is very much a U.S. concept. This campaign and the last one was something that I cannot recall in my experience. Some politics back maybe in the 90s and earlies and whatever. I think people are looking for vision. People are looking for people who want to govern and not to necessarily criticize others and demonize, if you will,
Does that link into the Chrétien-Martin thing where people may be still hurting from the idea that the Liberals had a transition that was forced instead of usually passed over?
Well, it was, having been there from 93 to 97, I must confess afterwards, after having left politics, there was a trench warfare going on between the Chrétien Liberals and the Martin Liberals, and there was an inability to unify the party. Now, whereas Stephen Harper comes in, he united three opposition parties, three conservative parties. He brought them together under one roof, under one umbrella, one message, and it was inevitable by uniting the right. As I recall, at the time, Mr. Chrétien would say before National Caucus, easy on Preston Manning, easy on Joel Clark. We need them. We have to divide the vote, and that's how we score 100 seats in Ontario. So it was inevitable by bringing the conservatives together a year and a half ago and coming up with a decent policy, which seems to be moderate and acceptable to many Canadians, at least it is to many people I've been speaking to. Therefore, it gives the Conservatives a fair chance to form the next government.
Pat, CJ wants to let us know what the election means to him. Hello, CJ.
Well, how are you there? It means that finally we can get rid of a government that we don't want. We can hold our heads up. We can start to maybe think that Canadians can get some pride back in the nation.
What does that mean to you, pride?
It means that I think that people will be made responsible, that Canadians will become responsible citizens, that our government will say, look, you've got to be responsible for your actions. You've got to be proud people. You've got to realize that if you're irresponsible, we'll punish you. And I think that's how you make a stronger nation.
That it's about responsibilities, not just rights.
That's it.
People have to give back.
You got it.
You know, CJ, Pat, Rick, I forgot this in the introduction to Pat, but Pat Gagnon was Parliamentary Secretary to Herb Gray, who was one of the finest public servants this country has had. Pat, how would Herb have reacted to this kind of campaign?
Well, this I speak for Herb, but I consider him one of my political mentors. At the time, I think it's just a question of focusing on four or five issues, talking about good government, pushing moderation, making real decisions instead of being everything to all people. And I think that's what we really missed in this campaign.
CJ,
we were all over the map, lack of focus, and of course the divisions and the lack of unity within the party obviously hurts and is really discouraging, if you will, of those who want to work for the party, the Liberals in this current election.
CJ, where do you think the public, the people, have been irresponsible? Where have they not been engaged? And
they have not been engaged and simply coming out in numbers and go to the Parliament and say, look, we demand better. We don't want people who have this kind of power to use it in such irresponsible manner. We don't want public money stolen continually and nobody going to jail. We don't want mass murders like Air India that occurred and nobody going to jail for it. You know, this is the public's irresponsible if they don't shout and don't, you know, get upset about these things. And I personally have been trying to get to the bottom of these things. And a lot of people have to call their leaders to task and say, you know what, stop governing for interest groups, govern for the people.
And the first place to start is at the election box tomorrow. And then secondly, to stay active and stay busy. Stay angry and keep pushing hard to make sure that these things happen.
You've got to make your citizens responsible or you're going to end up in trouble.
CJ, you mentioned the shootings in Toronto.
Yeah.
But I think you understand in some of what you said, I'm gathering you understand that not everything can be a government solution. You don't want the government putting the Canada in a straitjacket. Certain things can't be solved. What can be solved by people getting involved?
It starts with parents. It starts from a very, very young age. That if the parent says, you know what, and I'm a strong believer, and incidentally, if you have certain strong opinions in this country, some people call you intolerant or racist. Well, I have a couple of opinions. I think kids, for the most part, should be brought up at home with loving parents, and those parents should be rewarded, seeing as they're giving up something. Financially, that's where it starts. If you get your kids off on the right track, keep them coming up until a certain, keep watching them, keep loving them, and I think you'll make better citizens than if we just dump them off in a national, in a daycare system, which what I call a parking lot for kids.
CJ, we'll be right back on this. We're going to traffic.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Hello again, Montreal, and we're here talking about what this election can mean for each individual citizen. How much is government going to get out of our hair? We're in studio with Rick McConomy. Patrick Gagneau, the parliamentary group, will be joined at 12:35 by the Honorable John Crosby from St. John's. At 1 o'clock by Warren Kinsella from Toronto. And at 1:30, we're going to be talking about the whole question of personal rights with Michel Gervais of Citizens for Civil Liberties and Dan Romano from Citizens Against Government Encroachment in Montreal. Michel's from Toronto. Right now, we're on with CJ. And CJ, you were talking about the fact that you think government should let parents be more responsible. Should government not let citizens be more responsible in a lot of other areas and stop trying to control us, whether we're driving a bicycle or smoking a cigarette or anything else? How much of our individual consequence is going to be affected by the election results?
I think, you know, that's a good point, and I think it's largely a question of common sense. I think government is there to control the abuses that occur within society. Not to curb the freedom of people when it makes common sense.
Right, to protect you from me, not me from me.
That's it. You know,
Pat, you were in Ottawa in the 90s. When did this la vague, this wave of social engineering really crop up?
Well, it's always been there. I mean, governments always have a tendency to say we know best. You've seen that at the provincial level. You've seen that at the federal level. All I'm saying is for the federal Liberals and probably for a minority conservative government, is how do you define the role of government? What is government's responsibilities? What can the private sector do better than the public sector? That will have to be evaluated. We are over-regimented in many areas. I'm in small business, medium-sized businesses, the regular citizen. And that's why people want things a bit simpler. And I think we have to simplify government, and that's why the Liberals, in their promises, were all over the map. They were talking about the health care issues, child care. There was that lack of focus on one, two, three, or to a maximum of five issues. And when you're rolling in, like the Conservative Party, right smack in the middle of Christmas, in the Christmas shopping period, claiming that people weren't paying attention, but you're telling Canadians that you're going to bring GST down to 5%, you start thinking. Because as we know, the Christmas period is the part of the year that most Canadians will make their purchases.
And when you're making smoking a national crisis, and that's where you got the focus of your legislation, and that's the idea that people are arguing about, it doesn't make sense. That's not public policy.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm a non-smoker, but all I'm saying is that what really affects Canadians on a day-to-day level is the GST. Keep in mind, 1993, I must confess, federal Liberals in their red plan, in their red book was, we're going to abolish the GST. And, well, we didn't. And obviously the promise that's being made now is not to abolish it, but to reduce it. And it doesn't matter if it's a substantial amount or not. It's the perception, the idea that one will be paying less tax, less consumer tax, that tax on the taxes we know here in
Canada. And all those people that ended up swallowing the 15% in the end with the GST when it came in. I can know. I ran a small law firm at the time. My clients didn't take the increase.
No.
What happened went out of the profit margin, directly out of your bottom line.
That's the money issue. But CJ, I get the feeling on the street. I get the feeling when I give talks and certainly at the office that what's bothering people is not just a financial issue. Sure, everybody wants financial relief, but it's the amount of information the government is gathering on us. It's the amount of control they have into our private lives. You're hearing that from your friends, from your neighbors?
Well, yes, even to the point where certain phones may even be tapped that we don't even know about.
Well, yes, we've got a law now that was just passed before the election that allows our internet email and telephony records to be handed over to the government at simple request, no probable cause. How do you feel about that?
I think, you know, that is a terrible indictment on freedom. But I think even worse, and what really concerns me, aside from economic aspects, is that the social and moral fabric of the nation being torn apart, and a government actually helping to do that. And I think that's what's the most worrisome part, of society actually at the minute. Instead of government saying, you know what, society, certain things are going wrong, and we're here to put you right, they're actually getting along with the society and saying, yeah, we'll help you do these bad things. And I think, when I think of that, I think of things like daycare. Okay, you may not see that as an evil. It's not necessarily an evil. But when government says, we'll implant a large daycare system right across the nation, they're telling you more or less, you know what, you go out there and earn your dollars and we'll bring up your kids.
CJ, hang on, and we'll be right back to see if government's in our pants too much.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, hello again. We're talking about the election. Is this a rerun or renewal? But specifically, whoever gets elected, what's it going to take to get government out of our pants a bit? And we're on with CJ on the phone, Pat Gagnon of the Parliamentary Groups in the studio, with me as is Rick McConomy. CJ, I just want to wrap up with you because we're getting backed up. If there's one thing you want to see changed in tone and texture in the new government, tone and texture, not even so much details, what would it be? What do you want to hear from your leaders?
I want to hear from the leaders, basically, that they solemnly commit to governing for all Canadians, and they will forget these interest groups and dividing society into interest groups, and they will once and for all try and bring this country back to the Christian values that we had, where we loved one another, where we loved our children, where we brought our children up with love for their neighbor, no matter what color, creed they are.
Well, Christian, Jewish, or Muslim, or any values.
That's right.
Faith-based values.
Love. That's right.
CJ, thank you. Governing for all the people, what a concept. Montreal, I'd like to welcome the Honorable John Crosby, a very special guest. John, how are you?
Well, I'm great, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time. John Crosby is known to the whole country. He was Minister of Everything for many years in the Mulroney government, currently co-chairman of the Conservative Campaign for Atlantic Canada. But more importantly, this is a man who took out a great deal of the storehouse of reason and sanity from Ottawa when he left, and a great deal of the straight talk, or as Harry Truman used to say, plain speaking. His biography, no holds barred, says it all. John, you recently wrote that there are two kinds of politics. One, the politics of fear, the other, the politics of trust. And it reminds me of the old expression from the 19th century that a trust of the people, qualified only by prudence, is the guiding principle of government, not a mistrust of the people, qualified only by fear. Where are we going with this country right now, John?
Well, I mean, I think that the kind of campaign which Mr. Martin is waging after having been in power for 12 years is despicable, because it's certainly not based on trust. The campaign is based on arousing fear that the leader of his main rival party, Mr. Harper, is there's something somehow wrong with him. He's too far to the right or whatever. I mean, after 12 years in power, if the only way you can sell yourself to get reelected is to arouse hatred and to deliver, spend all your time delivering attacks and slanders against the leader of the main opposition party, this doesn't deserve support. This is not the kind of politics that we should be practicing in Canada. It's a real disservice, I think, to the Canadian people. We've got Martin's mendacity. He doesn't even attempt to stick to the truth. And we've got Bud Hargrave's hysteria. And the two, the Mad Hatter attacks on Harper, seems to be the substance of their campaign. So the only way to make sure that this is never attempted again in Canada is to give the people who are using those techniques a decisive defeat, a crushing defeat.
Are there precedents for that, John? Rick McConomy here. Are there precedents for that in 84 and 58 with a backlash?
Well, yes, but there was a back. People felt it was time for a change and so on, but the campaigns that were engaged in those years were nothing compared to the savagery and stupidity and the utter disregard for truth. And Mr. Martin claims he thinks that he has wonderful ideals, or he has, you know, he has wonderful, his values are so much more wonderful than Mr. Harper's. Well, I wouldn't be supporting Mr. Harper if I wasn't satisfied that he was a moderate and towards the middle of the road. And
John Crosby,
not a right-wing fanatic.
John Crosby will be back talking about the politics of trust right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
We're back. We've got Pat Gagneau in studio with us, with Rick McConomy and John Crosby on the line, and we're talking about the politics of trust, and will a new government ever learn to trust the people? John, and this is something I'd like to ask you. Stephen Harper, the new Tories, have painted themselves as populists, as a government, as a party that trusts the people's judgment. Can Canadians expect, should the Conservatives get elected, that there will be a rollback of a lot of the social engineering of the past 10 years without a replacement of that, of any moralizing?
Well, it's difficult to know what you'll be able to achieve if you're just a minority, of course. You need a majority to have a little leeway to change things around. But even the change of government, even if you're a minority, will make a major difference because, you know, even as a minority, you have you're in a position where you can take initiatives, and if the others, or one or two of the other parties go along with you, you can make changes, but you're more circumscribed, of course. So I think there's all kinds of things that changes that even a minority government can bring about, and I'm satisfied that they'll be doing that if they're elected with at least a minority.
John Crosby, I thank you for taking the time. I know that you're in the middle of a luncheon speech, and good luck to you.
Well, good luck to you, and good luck to Quebecers. I'm delighted to see how competitive it is there now, and I'm a bit surprised to see that Mr. Doucette is adopting the Martin technique since he got worried as to how things were going in Quebec because of the upsurge in support for the Conservative Party. It's a bit disappointing to see him attempting some of the same techniques that Mr. Martin has been using. So I hope that in Quebec there will be a good representation of third as elected.
Take care, sir. I know Pat Gagneau has something to say about that. Take care. Good speaking to you. Pat?
Well, you know, that's the other thing. I think the silver lining in all of this campaign as a Quebecois, as a Federalist, is to see that Bloc members, Bloc voters in the non-Montreal constituencies are looking at the Conservative Party as an option. I mean, this is good for democracy, but it's also good for Canada and obviously for national unity. And we can't discount that. First and foremost, our interest here is to preserve the union and is to improve the country. But Doucette, the good Stalinist that he is reverting these tactics of trying to demonize Harper. Of course, he's demonized the Liberals. And I think there's something that we should learn in all of this. I recall the 1995 referendum and having my differences with Mr. Chrétien and the provincial leadership in trying to scaremonger Quebecers and saying, you know, if you vote we, well, this is what's going to happen. You have to start selling a positive image of the country. You've got to start telling Quebecers and French Canadians that you are part of the deal. And I think this change, a likely change in government, will humble the Liberals to some extent. They're going to have to sort of review, revise, and they're going to have to reposition themselves if they're going to ever, and I'm sure they will, at some point in time, regain power.
Well, speaking about humbling the Liberals, Rick, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Pat, we have a surprise call. And for purposes of full disclosure, this is an old-time friend, Charlie Goreyev. Charlie, how are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Before we get into this, Charlie has been a long-time activist in the South Shore in the Chateauguay area, serves on the boards of many organizations. But he has been a vocal critic of the Liberal Party, particularly during the sponsorship fiasco. He's criticized the Prime Minister for his handling of it. He's criticized the party for courting bloc candidates. He resigned as president of the Chateauguay Liberal Party Riding Association. And now he's back as the Liberal candidate in Chateauguay St. Constant. What's up with that, Charlie?
What's up? There's nobody better to defend the liberalist values that we all adhere to, Beryl. And you know, I've been listening to the guests on the show, and there's one common denominator that I haven't heard. What we need to do is we need to get people to vote for their local candidates, to vote for what they believe is the right person. Because if you put the local candidates that belong in the different parties where they can make a difference, that's the only way you're ever going to be able to convince
leaders. Charlie, that's the whole issue. What are the liberal values? If liberal values just mean state engineering and as a replacement, as a deflection from performing for special interest groups, then aren't the people being hoodwinked? And if isn't that what everybody's angry about? They're in our pants. They're not telling us the truth.
That's not what liberal values are, Beryl. You know that better than anybody else. You and I have...
Large L liberals, not small L liberals.
That's what
large
I'm talking. L. I'm talking about small L liberal values. That is the only way we can bring them back to the Liberal
Party.
Are
you a voice in the wilderness in the party?
I am, and I'm very proud to be a voice in the wilderness, as you put it. But only when we can affect change can we be actually more than that. And what I'm trying to explain to people, and what I'm listening to John Crosby, and he was sounding, I mean, you managed to find the one relatively sane conservative out there somewhere. I mean, in Newfoundland, I mean, people have a little bit of common sense out there. Congratulations on that. But as soon as he started talking about Gilles Duceppe, what is the big surprise? Gilles Duceppe is a man who's demonized everybody, and as soon as he sees the polls rising one way or the other, he's going to demonize whoever it is. That's perfectly normal.
Staying on for the ride, Charlie. Staying on for the ride. Getting the coattails maybe is a yes, but sometimes the kick in the face comes from the feet that are under the coattails.
Well, what I'm finding interesting in all this is during the sponsorship issue and in the debates in the House of Commons, why did we allow the Bloc and Misiguchi and others just go after the Federalists, go after Canada, when we didn't see a number of our French-speaking Quebec ministers stand up in the House and take them on? Talk to them about l'affaire Oxygène Neuf, talk to them about problems with laundry, talk to them about all kinds of issues like that and how ballots were spoiled in the referendum. I didn't see our ministers take them on in the House of Commons, and that's why.
And we're going to be back with that, and who's taking on whom in 2 minutes.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, from the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're talking about what this election means to you. Do you feel that if anybody's elected, whoever's elected, that government will give you back your own freedoms, that they'll stop choking you? Can they respond to your needs? And is such a thing as values and vision left? And in studio is Rick McConomy, Pat Gagneau of the Parliamentary Group, and on the line, Charlie Goriab, Liberal candidate in Chateauguay-Saint-Constant. And we were just talking about values, Charlie.
We were, and a very interesting comment with regards to some of the minister's reaction, which brings us back to your intro of me in the show. I was critical of that non-reaction. I am critical of the Prime Minister's handling of the sponsorship situation. However, it doesn't change the fact that when you aspire to small L liberal values, as you put it, you must remember that there are local candidates who do stand up for those. And how do you get a better leader if you don't put the better candidates in there to help change the direction?
Before I turn you over back to Pat and Rick, I want to ask Montreal. Montrealers, do you know what small L liberal values are? And are they important to you? Call us, 790-0006. That's important. It's important for us to know what you feel are values and visions in this campaign. Pat, I know you had something to say to Charlie.
Well, having been an MP, there's no denying that we should encourage the electorate to evaluate the various local candidates to see what kind of, you know, competences they may have, what are their views on various issues. The role of the MP today is a lot different than what it was 10 years ago. They now have significant roles in various committees. They can influence their various caucuses. There are voices that can be heard, and often we've sort of set aside the role of the backbencher. However, as we move on, You know, it has been a relative success. This Liberal government over 12 years, after bringing down the deficit by $44 billion to current surpluses that we now have. But once that all was done, what's next? What's the vision? What's the plan? Can you tell me in about 20 words or less what is the Liberal vision? What's the Liberal plan? Should we move forward with a Liberal minority government or Liberal majority government, if that were the case?
And if these days you believe in small L liberal values, do you stay with the big L liberal party? I mean, Ignatieff has just lost his chief organizer, and he's lost his president of his local association because they won't stick through to the end under the big L liberal banner. And I think that there used to be a tradition in this country that if you didn't agree with the leader, you didn't agree with the party, you ran independent, and you ran head-to-head with a Liberal candidate.
We have Ed with a comment on the Liberals. Ed, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. You're on with Charlie Gorya, Pat Gagneau, Rick McConomy.
Just a quick comment. I used to be involved with the Liberal Party, did a lot of work for them at the national level, but I'm just disgusted by what they've
done. In what area?
Well, I worked on a national level with the recruitment of new members and stuff like that.
Any particular geographic part of the country?
Quebec.
Right.
So, you know, you support their values until you know better. I think the big question here is we're hearing them make all this political rhetoric about how they have these great ideas and how it's going to change the country. Well, you've been in power for 12 years. If you have these great ideas, why haven't you implemented them up to now? The second fundamental difference between the Liberals and the Conservatives now is not who's good or who's bad. It's who can better spend your money. The Liberals believe they can, and the Conservatives believe the population can. So it's a fundamental difference of belief.
Well, there's an empowerment. You're telling us that you think that the Conservatives are going to let the people spend their own money by giving back, what, the $100 or the couple hundred dollars for the daycare and let the people make their own decisions. That's a step in the right direction. Is that what you're telling us?
It's a step in the right direction. It's not big enough, but hey, they can only do so much on a first run. We've been ransacked by the government for the last who knows how many hundred years. The Liberal parties haven't done any better. They promised to cut the GST. They didn't. They promised to reduce taxes. They've done little change for the middle-class Canadian who pays most of the tax. And all we're seeing here is they're coming out with a new platform that's going to spend I don't know how many billion dollars. They've had the option to do it. Why haven't they done it up to now?
Ed, stay with us. Why haven't they done it up to now? We'll be right back with that question.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
Montreal, welcome back. We're talking about what this election means to you, if anything. Is it rerun or renewal? And whoever's elected, are they going to get out of our hair as big government? In studio, Rick McConomy, Pat Gagneau of the Parliamentary Group, Charlie Gorya, Liberal candidate in Châteauguay-Saint-Constant, and on the line, we're going to Giovanni, a Liberal voter. He identifies himself as Giovanni.
Yes, and I would say the majority of the Italian, Greeks, and most of the immigrants are voting for the Liberal Party because we know that they hold Canada together. I came to this country in 1951. My God, I will vote for Bloc Québécois even if they want to kill me. Because
well, Giovanni, you're going to have an interesting segment coming up because another special guest of ours will be Nino Colavecchio, who will be speaking on his own behalf, but is president of the National Italian Congress, and he'll have some interesting things to discuss with us. But let's hear from you more.
Hello?
Nothing can move your vote, right?
Nothing, but it's not this. If to vote for Bloc Québécois, I have to pay the taxes to destroy my country. There are French people who vote for him. They are crazy. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Do you,
Giovanni, is there only two parties in this election?
That was my question.
There's a question. Are you looking at the Conservatives, the Green, NDP?
I'm looking at the Liberal Party, and I know that every party has some junk in it. They have to clean this out, have some honest people in there, not put in people like one in Vancouver that was smuggling things and things like that. So they have to choose the people through a magnifying glass, who they will represent us.
Yeah, but they've got to be honest with the people that they think they're throwing out also, aren't they?
I'd like to ask a question as well. What does he think about the Public Service Alliance of Canada supporting Bloc candidates in this upcoming election?
Well, look, I just don't understand them. period. I just understand them, and I don't understand majority people in Quebec want to separate, because I went through separation in Italy, and I would have still starving even since. If we separate here, we're going to be starved for 5 years, they say. I think it will be 2020.
But in Malwa said.
Giovanni, so even a member of the Italian community like Vincent Della Noce, who won for the Tories some 15 years ago in Laval, nothing will move you from the Liberals.
No, no, sir. Nobody will turn over Liberals.
Giovanni,
no.
Thanks very much. Been a pleasure talking to you. And David wants to put in his 2 cents. David, good afternoon. Welcome to The Last Angry Man, 790-0006.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure. You're I on just... with Pat Gagnon, Rick McConomy, and Charlie Goria.
Okay. You're talking about values this afternoon, and, you know...
One overriding value. How can government get out of our hair and respect individual citizens' sense of consequence?
Well, I want to talk just for a moment about values during this election. Paul Martin's had a great deal to say about values, how important they are, how different the conservative values are from his values. But quite frankly, I have no idea what his values are. All I heard him do was attack Stephen Harper. And that concerns me. That's a lack of values, in my view.
But David, we're gonna have Charlie Goriev try and answer this.
I'd like
David, stay with us. We're going to have Charlie Goriev try and answer that right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Hello, Montreal. We're talking about this election, what it means to you, if anything. Is government going to get out of our hair, whoever's elected? And our lines are lit. So we've got David, who just wanted to know what liberal values are. And I'm Charlie Goriev. I was going to answer that. Charles?
I'm going to make that really simple for my friend David. The NDP, simple. They believe that government should be in everybody's face, that the whole, all of society needs the help of government. The conservatives feel that nobody needs the help of government. Liberals understand that there are 20 to 30% of the people who need government to help them, and who need government to protect society against the segment.
Now, Charlie, you don't believe that.
I do. Absolutely.
At what you don't believe the conservatives don't think that anybody needs the help of government.
I
and you also
that
know that in exchange for whatever meager help the government does give, this government's demanding a lot of intervention in our lives, aren't they?
Never let me finish what the Liberals are standing for. The Liberals are standing for the fact that there is a place for government in people's lives, but that that place needs to be very, very carefully used. And every once in a while, we go too far one way or the other. But I absolutely do believe that conservative values are that people basically tend to fend for themselves. And although there was a lot of controversy around a couple of comments made by some liberal people, the very simple fact that conservatives just want to put money in the hands of the people, put money back in the hands of the people, and claim that to be the panacea for all of our problems, it's simply false.
Yeah, it's a really terrible thing to make people responsible for themselves. David, what do you think of Charlie's version of liberal values?
Well, first of all, I'm losing you because I'm on a cell phone here.
Oh, that's bad.
But I just tell you, he talked about a couple of comments. I haven't heard a good answer to all the attack ads. I think they were terrible and very vicious, and I think it's left a bad taste in people's mouths. I gotta go.
David, thanks very much, and we're on with Paul. Paul, how are you? What's bothering you? Let's stop.
Well, I think, the notion that government is in people's daily lives, I think they're overdoing it now. And one way they do that is by taking our tax dollars. The notion that government can better spend than the society is ridiculous. I say this because I do have a strong finance and economic background. So, you know what I mean, right?
But Paul, aside from money, which everybody bitches about, they take too much money, what about the intervention in our lives, the information they're collecting, the laws that restrict our social activities? Doesn't any of that bother you?
Yes, it bothers me a lot. For example, I asked a candidate of the Green Party once what their percentage of funding was from, it's probably public information, but what was the amount of money he received in terms of financing from the people versus the financing from government? Because if it's a party for the people, by the people, right, then the people will give.
Did you get an answer?
No, he told me, well, that's not important right now.
Well, that's the kind of thing that makes you not want to vote for somebody, right?
Well, you know, like, if people really believe...
It's an undenial denial.
Exactly. Like, if people really believe that the environment was so important to them that they had to have a political force in the office of government, surely you'd give $2 a head to some party member or some guy who comes knocking on your door asking for some type of support.
Yeah, but he's got to come knocking on your door six months ago, a year ago.
Right? That's what it takes. If you want to be a salesman, if you want to make your points, that's what you got to do. I just want to bring up one point. Jimmy Carter came from a small town of 400 people, and he became president. So imagine how many people he had to knock on the doors before he got to the level.
You bet. And
he spent 8 years going to every small newspaper, every small radio station across the entire United States.
That's what it takes, but I don't think we have that in this country.
Well, maybe the big parties will learn, or at least the liberal party, to elect a leader from the streets.
Well, I think, the House of Commons, House of Commoners, right? So maybe that's what you need to do, because it's a top-down approach that we have here in Canada. It's not a bottom-up approach.
That's an excellent note to end on. House of Commons, House of Commoners. Let's represent the people. As the previous caller said, government representing the people. What a notion. Paul, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I want to introduce a special guest before our next break, Nino Colavecchio. Nino, how are you?
I'm very well, Beryl. How are
Nino
you?
Colavecchio is president of the National Congress of Italian Canadians. He's been active in politics on every level for over 25 years, communication specialist and a dear friend and a dear friend of the Institute. Nino, you're on with Charlie Goria, Pat Gagnon, Rick McConomy. What do you say to voters, not just Italian voters like Giovanni, who was so firmly liberal? What do you say to ethnic communities who are sort of stuck in their duality? Liberal, conservative, and that's it.
Yeah, first of all, Beryl, it seems like we're having a former liberal's love-in here today, so it's nice to be on with everyone. But I think that the time is...
Is the key word former?
Yeah, well, my particular...
Not always.
Is, but I hear some kind of...
Nino, you're going to have to deal with Charlie here. You know, he's really becoming irritable.
Hang on, Charlie.
Now, hold on a second. Let me pour some more red.
Well, let Nino have a say on this.
Okay.
We'll get back to you after 1:20.
First of all, I think you've got to look at a situation where the liberals, when we talk about great liberal values, and I'm sorry to tell you, Charlie, but it seems to me that the only liberal values that really continue to live on is the get elected at all costs value. So what happens is that at every...
Sorry, Nino, at this point I should say, just for purposes of disclosure, you are speaking as an individual, Congresso.
Absolutely,
right.
As an individual. But we get, you know, the get elected at all costs issue and so every time an election comes along, we love the ethnic communities, and we love them, and, you know, we need their votes, and we really believe that they help build Canada. Except the reality is, if you look at the community, for example, the Italian community that has 250,000 and more members in this province, they raise more money for the Liberals than any other community in the province as well. How many members of Parliament do we have in Quebec that are of Italian origin? How has the Italian community benefited from voting Liberal for all these years? Actually, what happens is we're unfortunately camped all in one side.
We'll get right back to this after the station makes some money.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Pat, you got to move your arm.
Hello.
Montreal, we're back. Pat Gagnon in studio with Rick McAdamy, and we're talking about the consequence of this election. What does it mean to you? Do you want government off your back? What is this whole thing about values? And we were just in the middle of a discussion between Nino Colavecchio, president of the National Italian Congress, and Charlie Goriab, who was running for the Liberals in the Châteauguay-Saint-Constant. And Nino was asking Charlie about what has the party done for ethnic groups in Quebec, or ethnic representation. So, gentlemen, continue.
Yes, well, the point again, what I would say to members of ethnic communities is, you know, losing a Liberal government will not be the end of the world. Voting for a Bloc candidate will not be the end of the world. Choose the candidates that best represent your community's interests and Canadians' interests.
Thank you.
Choose a Federalist candidate.
Was that Mr. McConomy? I understand.
That was Mr. Gagneau, actually, Mr. Colabecchio.
No, but I'm prepared to repeat that. Yeah. Pugh's a Federalist candidate.
Don, right. I agree with that. I think that all parties that are running in this election are running in a federal election, Patrick. So I think that they're all legitimate.
Well, as I say, from coming from Far Eastern Quebec, I don't believe the Bloc Québécois has the real interest of Canadians. And frankly, I think a lot of rural Quebecers are turning away from them, and this is great for federalism and certainly great for the unity of the country.
I can't believe I'm hearing Mr. Colavecchio calling the Bloc Québécois a legitimate federal party. That is absolutely unbelievable.
Well,
for them to
what I'm saying is that they are legitimately running in this election. And if we go back to the way our system was created, parliamentarians are. And we vote for individuals.
Yes.
And you said it yourself, Charlie,
Federalists are going to legitimately defeat them at some point.
Well,
yes, but let's remember inside of the groups, either the Jewish community or the Italian community, we have a growing French population, and they may be tempted by the Bloc Québécois. It's important for them also to understand.
They don't have a lockup on
Rick, surely it's not illegitimate when Nino says there is a legitimate federal party that is pushing a sovereigntist option. It's still a legitimate federal party.
Yes,
you may not like the opinions.
And that is the way I meant it. I think they're legitimate
candidates. I'm not denying the fact that these people have the right to run. Quite to the contrary, I absolutely believe that. But are they a legitimate federal party? They're not, in my opinion.
They have a right to exist, and that's what our whole system is about. Our whole system is about people being able to say, as they said in Valier and Gagneau in the 1960s, that you can come out and say, I don't like the way this country is structured. I want something different and better.
Exactly.
That's valid. Whether or not they're right when they say that is another thing, but they have a right to say it.
And Charlie, another thing, you know, it brings up the whole question, your original tone of the comment, and I'm sure you didn't mean it as sharply as it came out, brings in the whole question of this Liberal Party, this capital L Liberal Party, and its whole culture of exclusiveness, not inclusiveness, even for opposing points of view, within it. And that is something very hard for you to defend, but I wish you the best of luck as a friend. Charlie, we're pressed on the clock. Thanks for being with us.
Have fun, guys.
Thank you. Nino, we'll be back with you in one moment.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. And in studio is Rick McConomy and Pat Gagneau. On the line, Nino Colavecchio, President of the National Italian Congress. And we're talking about whether this election has any consequence or are people just fed up with big government. And on the line, a very special guest. Warren Kinsella has a reputation as a liberal gadfly, former senior advisor to Prime Minister Chrétien, columnist. He's with the Public Policy Group out of Toronto. But I want to point out also, before we get into politics for a few minutes with him, that he's the author of a couple of very important books, one on international terrorism called Unholy Alliances, which I recommend as an important read. Warren, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure,
I know that you're doing an important family obligation with your son right now.
Yeah.
So we're not going to keep you on for long. But you wrote something recently that just stuck in my mind all week. Canadian voters are not passive receptacles into whose brains people can just pour their own ideas. Now, we've been trying to get a feeling here of what it will take for Canadians to take back their own consequence. What it will take for them to get fed up. What's your opinion about that? What's this campaign all about in response to that issue?
I think that what's happening here is a bit of kind of nasty black anger. There's kind of a typically Canadian slow moving anger that's taking place here, and I think that the Liberal Party of Canada, of which I have been part for a long time, is associated by a lot of people with elites and kind of just a bunch of people who are pretty out of touch. And Harper, I thought, has very shrewdly associated himself with, you know, hockey moms and dads and stressed his middle class roots and kind of spoken to that anger that exists out there, that kind of simmering anger, and said, look, I'm like you. I'm not a multimillionaire ship owner who flies his flags under foreign, flies his ships under foreign flags. I'm a guy like you, and so is my wife, and here's our kids, and let's give it a shot. And I think tomorrow people are going to give it a shot.
Are they? Or you wrote another book, of course, the most recent one with a great title, Kicking Ass in Canadian Politics. Are Canadians capable of kicking ass anymore?
Well, I think so. Yeah, I mean it really. I mean, this change is a powerful, powerful political force, as you know. And Canadians have been desiring change since about the start of 2004 when Mr. Martin came in, and a lot of people formed the impression that the emperor has no clothes. So there was a desire for change. It's just in 2004 it hit a wall because they felt that while Stephen Harper represented change, it was too radical change. So 2006, this historic election campaign has all been about kind of a referendum on Stephen Harper and whether he's been able to convince them that the change that he's going to bring is too radical, it's too extreme. And obviously he's convinced a significant number of Canadians in every part of the country, and most importantly in Quebec, that he's changed, but he's not a maniac, and we're going to give this guy a shot.
Warren Rick's got a question.
Warren, are we looking at something like 58 or 84? Is there a possibility that Ontario goes big?
Well, the way Ontario breaks, when it breaks, when the Tories start moving above 30 points, which quite frankly they haven't done since Brian Mulroney was leader of the Conservative Party, that's when they start really picking up seats. So what you're going to be seeing in Ontario is a virtual near wipeout of the Liberal Party in rural areas, and you're going to be seeing Toronto kind of reduced to an island. It's going to be the Red Island, as I called it.
Warren, we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Montreal, the election's coming up. Rerun or renewal, our lines are packed. So, Warren, Pat Gagnon just has a quick question for you, then we're going to let you go back to your son, and we're going to take the call. Pat?
Warren, how are you? It's Patrick. Listen, I just wanted to know, in your estimation, what's next? What happens tomorrow night? What's the scenario? And what options do the Liberals have?
I think Harper, you know, he's tracking at about 10 to 12 points ahead nationally. He's closing in on 30 points in Quebec, which is just absolutely amazing. And a lot of people, me included, did not foresee. But despite all of that, there is a bit of a holdback. He shrunk a bit in Ontario at the start of last week. So he's looking at 140s, mid-140s. And so just shy of a majority. The Liberals in the Bloc at this point look like they may be duking it out for who gets to be the official opposition, which is incredible. If that is the case, if I'm right about that in the seat projections, Paul Martin has no choice. He's not even going to move into Stornoway. He's got to leave. Obviously, that's particularly the case if he loses his seat. It's particularly the case if the Liberal Party is definitively reduced to the third political party status in the House of Commons. So,
and who's next?
Honestly, my understanding is...
Who's next is Warren's son, Warren Kinsella, author of Kicking Ass in Canadian Politics and one of the most astute observers of the scene in Canada. Warren, we thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Beryl.
Take care.
Everybody
thanks,
vote. Man.
Yeah, you got it.
Nancy's on the line from Ottawa.
Yes, everybody vote. My daughter-in-law stays home with her three children, my three grandchildren. And I feel she's important. And the Conservatives want to help keep mothers or fathers that stay home with their children. And that's what I think is a good thing.
So you think that people can handle their own lives without every single 5 minutes being reported to by some bureaucrat?
Definitely. And she's worth something. And so is it, and so is stay-home fathers worth something. And I've worked hard all my life. And now I'd like to see my property that I own really owning it. I want property rights in the Constitution.
Good for you, Nancy. Thanks very much. We're on with Andy.
Hello there.
How are you?
Not too bad. You know, I came to the conclusion there's political value, but not Canadian political value. Because no matter what I hear, none of them are. They each seem to be worth The liberals are working for the Liberal Party, top coming down. The conservatives are saying, I already voted, holding my nose. I didn't vote liberal. I didn't vote conservative. But I don't believe any of them. Because the basic thing which would make the people comfortable having a government is honesty and integrity and accountability. And none of them really went with those things. They all said one thing. We will give you this. We will give you this. But they will not tell you that we will give you real honesty, real accountability. I voted NDP and I held my nose. But at the same time, I think Jack Layton made one comment which threw me.
Andy, what does real mean to you?
What it would mean to me...
Very briefly, what does real mean?
Very simply, that there would be equal opportunity for businesses dealing with the government. There would be real honesty when they give the tenders. There would be real honesty when they deal with advisors. There would be real honesty when they take a pension after two terms, which no regular person can have. They are overrated, overpaid, and they...
In other words, we need transparency, accountability, and representatives in the House of Commons that are closer to the way real folks really live.
Yes. But none of them have given that. I tell you the truth, there should be, I've said this a lot of times, and you have heard it from a lot of people, there should be a place on the ballot that none of the above, to show the people, the politicians, we are willing to vote for somebody who is really more down to earth. They honestly...
That would be quite a message if only if we had 80% spoiled ballots. Andy, we thank you for your call.
Thank you.
I just, Montreal, we've been trying to get out of your of our listeners and out of our guests the problem of big government. And what we've talked a lot about taxes, we've talked a lot about daycare, we've talked a lot about property rights, but the fundamental issue is that whatever party, or the right or the left, government has grown huge, and it's a problem for individual citizens. And I want to introduce two special guests right now, and we want to close the program on this issue. In studio is Dan Romano. He's a lawyer. He's president of CAGE, Citizens Against Government Encroachment, that is involved with, among other things, the challenge that Julius Gray, the constitutional lawyer, is making against Quebec's Bill 112, the anti-tobacco legislation. And from Ontario, we have Michel Gervais. Gervais, Michel, how are you?
Oh, I'm just fine today, Beryl. How are you?
Very well. Michel is media director for Citizens for Civil Liberties in Ontario. And Dan, I understand that CAGE and Citizens for Civil Liberties cooperate on many things together. Could you explain? Right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back, and as we round up the show, we have two special guests. Dan Romano, president of CAGE, Citizens Against Government Encroachment. Michel Gervais, media director in Ontario for Citizens for Civil Liberties. And we're going to let them address the issue of, does it matter who gets elected? Because is government just too big and too invasive? And what do we need to stop it? And they will join us next week when we analyze the results of the election. Michel, Dan, welcome.
Thank you very much, Beryl. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you, Beryl.
I think groups like 2CL and CAGE are sprouting out all over the place because...
2CL is Citizens for Civil Liberties.
Yes, that's how they call themselves often. We're sprouting up because we want the government out of, one, autonomy over our own bodies, and also our freedom of lifestyle, how we choose to live.
Michelle, what are the issues in Ontario?
Well, they're pretty much the same. I'll give you an example of what we're talking about. I was reading an American newspaper, and they were talking about a trucking company that was looking at imposing more health care costs onto the employees. And the newspaper article interviewed a lot of employees. And every single employee they interviewed looked at someone else and said, they're the reason why I have to pay more. This person is overweight. This person has 9 children. This person is older. This person jogs in traffic on a smog day.
The health issues have been covered widely in the press, both here and in Quebec, the anti-tobacco stuff and all that. But in Ontario, you have an added dimension, which I want to ask you whether that resonates with people. You've got you've got a couple of ministers, Kennedy and Watson, one is an education minister, and they put in these laws that it's almost a criminal offense if you leave school before 18 and you have to wear a helmet if you ride a bike because one of the ministers...
And if you bring a chocolate bar with a peanut to school, you're in defiance of Sabrina's law.
Are Ontarians not having enough of this? I mean, it's one thing to talk about health-related issues of state engineering, but this is just... Seems to be madness.
That's the reason why 2CL exists, is because we have had enough. I sent you a letter that we had written to Jim Watson. He wrote up a great big letter to the citizens of Ontario, telling citizens of Ontario that smokers were non-productive, were worse than heroin addicts, and were costing the healthcare system money, and that it was our duty to be healthy for the state.
I see. So that means he would have put, like, Leonard Cohen, Mordecai Richler, Ernest Hemingway, everybody as non-productive citizens.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Absolutely.
Dan, what do you have to say
brilliant.
About that?
The fact that a government would dare to speak to its citizens in this way.
In that condescending, supercilious...
insulting, and demonizing.
And worse, and the fact that the citizens accept it is where the true problem is, because it's happened so much and so progressively that people almost think it's normal. It's normal for the government to say, you must not smoke, you must promote your life, your health to the maximum degree, you must be a productive citizen for as long as possible.
And now Watson has announced that fat is the new tobacco.
Oh, absolutely.
So now it's not just what we smoke, it's what we eat.
It's becoming such that our bodies don't belong to ourselves anymore. It's almost like we're farm animals. Instead of producing eggs or milk, we're producing tax money to feed these folks in Quebec or in Ottawa. And we're not farm animals. We've got other aspirations then to live long and work hard to feed this system, this gigantic juggernaut that's ever expanding through mission creep and trying to invade into our lifestyles.
Very briefly, what would both of you have to say to Canadian voters as they go in tomorrow if this was their one agenda item? First, Michelle.
I would have to say that because the health issue has grown so large, it's gotten to the point where governments cannot resist imposing their power, expanding their power into citizens' lives through the health care issue.
And that voters should keep that in mind when they get into the voting booth. Dan?
I would say insist on a smaller government and less taxes, because the less money of ours they have to spend, the less they can misuse and abuse.
Rick, you had something to say on this.
All I want to say to all of our listeners is don't panic tomorrow. Don't act out of fear. Mm-hmm. Exercise your vote. Exercise that vote. And then stay involved after. Yeah. Be there and keep going with people like 2CL and people like Cage and other people that we'll be bringing you with this show.
Dan, Michelle, we're going to have you back next week. Montreal, Ontario, Canada, thank you for listening. Remember, as you go to the polls, a nation of sheep will always beget the government of wolves. I'm Beryl Wise from The Last Angry Man. info@iapm.com is my email address. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. The Last Angry Man can be heard Sundays from noon to 2. Beryl Wiseman is the president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal.